I think we're the number one entertainment show, mm-hmm. not sports. Entertainment. Because it just happens we're talking about basketball.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Pro Podcast. I am your host for this week. It's just me. George Breuer is busy scheming for Sports Pro Madrid, which is coming up very, very fast in the calendar. We'll be there next week. You'll be able to hear from us on the ground in Madrid in some form. I am lucky enough to be joined by a man who got over his jet lag, but the reason he is jet lagged is that he's been on a very exciting adventure over to Atlanta. Sam Karp, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me back on. I think this new lighting setup we've got is ensuring the effects of the jet lag don't impact me during the next sort of 20 minutes, 30 minutes or so.
You'll see on the social clips, listeners, that Sam is lit fantastically, and I'm going to take all of the credit for that.
Also blinded.
Well, yeah, we don't care about retinas here on the Sports Pro Podcast. Sam, your trip to Atlanta sounded amazing, but none of us, well, none of the listeners know what it was. Can you just fill us in? Tell us where you've been, what you've been doing?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, basically it all happened quite quickly. From a personal perspective, moved flat on the Sunday. Monday morning, I was on a flight to Atlanta. Anyone moving flat wouldn't recommend booking a transatlantic trip for 6 a.m. the day after. But yeah, the experience and the sort of access I got while I was in Atlanta definitely made it worthwhile. So I was basically there with Warner Bros. Discovery, specifically to head over to TNT Sports Studios in Techwood in Atlanta, which is basically where they produce their NBA coverage. So TNT has been showing the NBA since the late 80s. They show 65 games a season at the moment. Together with Disney, are paying a combined $2.6 billion a year to show the NBA. But alongside those live games, they have a studio show called Inside the NBA, which has basically become one of the most popular entertainment shows, really, in the US. And that's fronted by four guys who a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with, especially those in the US, but I'd imagine some in the UK as well, based on some of the conversations that I had before I went and the excitement that people had when I told them that I was going. Ernie Johnson is the host of the show. He's been hosting it since for over 30 years now, and he's kind of a bit of a legend in US sports broadcasting, being inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, I believe, out there. Also Shaquille O'Neal. People remember him as probably one of the best centers to ever play in the NBA. Charles Barkley as well, and then Kenny Smith. Kenny Smith has a couple of NBA championships too. Chuck doesn't, but he has 11 All-Star appearances, so he wasn't bad either.
Not bad, yeah. I mean, Charles Barkley, famously star of my favourite film of all time, Space Jam.
Yeah.
don't think Shaq was in that, and Kenny Smith definitely wasn't. But I think a lot of people are familiar in the UK with Inside the NBA, but more probably as a social media product than anything else. And we're going to come on to that, how that's going to be changing a little bit later on. But yeah, I've been to the TNT studios in Atlanta. The first ever Sports Pro USA was held there in 2020. So I've been in the same place, just not the same time. It's really cool seeing it all come together and like the studio setups and stuff. Before we kind of get into the questions, like it's probably just a good point to talk about Inside the NBA as a bit of a cultural phenomenon, right? Like they first started in 1989, I believe, and then it was picked up as well and is aired on NBA TV. That started in 2003. Gets between like 500,000 and 1.5 million viewers per show, depending obviously on who's playing and general interest at that point in the season. And then in the playoffs, I mean, the numbers for that skyrocket. But it's unique, right? Like it's unique in the NBA broadcast picture anyway. Like ESPN focus on their coverage is very stats heavy and detail orientated, whereas this is really personality driven.
Yeah, and I think TNT really leans into those personalities and kind of lets the guys go. Just so the listeners are aware, I kind of got to sit on set while they were recording their sort of halftime coverage during the San Antonio Spurs and Oklahoma City Thunder game. The biggest compliment I can say is that you couldn't really tell when they were on air and when they were off air, because they were exactly the same when the cameras started rolling and when they weren't. I haven't been on too many sets before when they're filming live, so I was kind of keeping very, very quiet, trying to sneak as many photos as I could, as you do with the socials. But Ernie Johnson had kind of been sat there for a good few minutes, and there wasn't really that long until they were due to go live. Charles Barkley appeared first and kind of strolled over to his chair on the desk, and then you hear a producer kind of go like, shout out 5 minutes to live, and Shaq and Kenny still aren't at their seats. And then kind of everything's quiet on the set, and Shaq out of nowhere bursts through a door, bouncing a basketball. Kenny Smith is just behind him and says to him, look, I bet you $100 that you can't make a shot from this baseline that was painted on the set into a steel-mounted basket, which was also at the back of the set, which in the words of one TNT employee, it's mounted with steel so that if Shaq wants to dunk, he can dunk. Shaq sort of takes this shot, and even before he looks to see if it's dropped, he's already walking over to his seat because he knows it's going in. And just kind of that playfulness, that chemistry was visible from that point to the moment they started recording live as well. Yeah, throughout the program, like, the four of them were cracking jokes, but also balancing that with really good insight into the game that they just watched. And I think that's kind of what makes the show so popular, is that people come because the NBA is on, they're going to get that analysis, but they're also going to be entertained as well. There's loads of slapstick elements within it, which I'm sure a lot of people remember from over the years who've watched it regularly. It has those viral moments, as you mentioned, like, that's why people in the UK are probably familiar with it as well. So yeah, there's something for everyone within it, and it's something that people can relate to.
I mean, I guess some of that chemistry as well comes from the fact that they've been doing it together for so long. I think Kenny Smith joined in 98, Charles Barkley 2000, Shaq 2011. Can't remember when Ernie Johnson took over as presenter, but it's not entirely relevant.
1990, I think. I've been there a very long time.
This guy knows. But yeah, the bits you kind of see over here are stuff like Shaq's in a fall, which is the kind of blooper segment. But you don't get that chemistry without time, I don't think, when it comes to a show like that. But also, you don't get it, I don't think, without like allowing them to be who they're going to be. So you spoke when you were out there to Craig Barry from the US TNT operation, as well as Kenny Smith and Scott Young, who I think maybe European listeners to the Sports Broadcast might be more familiar with as a sort of long-time industry broadcast industry veteran. But like, what did you learn about how that show has grown over time and how they create it?
Yeah, so Craig Barry, he's executive vice president and chief content officer of what is now Warner Bros. Discovery Sports, but obviously he's kind of been there for a long time, has been working on Inside the NBA for a long time. He basically described the non-secret source, I think was the way he puts it, as he said that basically the talent, apart from Ernie Johnson, don't attend production meetings. So whatever footage they're seeing on set, they're seeing for the first time and sort of reacting in that moment to it. So I think that's kind of been the key to it. You know, it's being, that's not to say they don't plan it, they don't sort of work out what assets are going to be running and during the show and whatnot. But I think being able to have that trust in the talent that's on set, knowing the chemistry that they have, I think that's kind of the key to their success at the moment. Yeah, we can probably hear from Craig now to elaborate on that and what I just said a little bit more.
We have these production meetings, and the only reason they would be interesting to Scott or anybody else is just Ernie. And we go through the format. It's a very loose format, but we go through all the elements and assets that, you know, that we're going to use in the show. And Charles and Kenny and Shaq aren't invited. And not that they would come anyways. And the reason is because when we get to the show, every time, everything that they're seeing, they're seeing for the first time, and they're reacting in real time, authentically, the same way the fan is. So this emotional connection is being created with the fan, because when they see the highlight, it's the first time they see it. When they see the feature about Bill Russell, it's the first time they see it. When we drop the odds for betting, it's the first time they see it. They're not in production meetings taking notes. They're not prepared. They have no idea what's coming at them next. And we throw them curveballs all the time, as you know. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of the controlled chaos of the show, which makes it special. My creative director, I got to give him credit for this, because he once said, he kind of equated it to jazz, like where one of them starts playing and then the other one just jumps on and mm-hmm. goes with the beat, and then the other one just jumps on yep. and keeps the rhythm. And that's kind of, they just have great chemistry, which is the core and the root of great television.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff, isn't it, when you get to finally hear from the people that make TV shows. I'm always kind of like, ah, oh. What you see comes through your screen and it's like this finished product, but there's loads going on in the background and stuff that you may think of as being completely like, they must have planned that. They can only have set that up. Sometimes it's not at all, and it seems like that's the secret inside the NBA. There was some also interesting stuff, I thought, from Kenny Smith on that as well, who you spoke to when you were there. Can you tell us a little bit about how he feels as a cast member, like bouncing off his co-host?
Yeah, Kenny Smith was He was really interesting to speak to. He, funnily enough, so I mentioned at the top of the show that he is a two-time NBA winner. We spoke to him during a media roundtable and someone asked him, what do you think you're made more famous for? Do you think it's, you know, winning NBA titles, your time as a player, or do you think it's your time on Inside the NBA? And he like took no time to answer. He said Inside the NBA 100%. He was like, said he could be walking through an airport and people would be shouting out, it's the Jet from Inside the NBA. They're not shouting out, it's the Jet who won two NBA titles. Talking to him, you could see the warmth that he has towards the show and also his co-panelists. I think what was really interesting to me was just he kind of referred to the whole thing as sort of like a real family environment. I think we've all watched shows before where you can see that like the pundits don't necessarily have that chemistry or aren't necessarily that comfortable around each other. And even on the night that I was there, Shaq was putting Chuck in a headlock to basically mimic what Draymond Green had done that night to Rudy Gobert. And, you know, you can imagine a lot of producers kind of panicking in that moment and thinking, what on earth is he doing? But I think the nature of this show is that they're just happy for the talent to run with that kind of thing and just see where it goes. And I think, you know, Kenny Smith spoke a lot about that trust side of things. He also gave a little bit of insight into who plays what role. So Shaq, he said, is responsible for most of the slapstick. Chuck, 90% of the time, he says, is the one who brings the controversy. And then he referred to himself, I guess, as the psychologist, which I thought was an interesting way of putting it, because he said he almost sits in the seat of like the viewer and that he's the one reacting to Shaq's slapstick and Chuck's maybe sort of more controversial statements and kind of playing the role of the viewer and putting them up on those and participating in Shaq's slapstick fun and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, really interesting to get his insight into being on set. But the overwhelming sense you got from talking to him is just that it's like a lot of fun.
Maybe we can just hear a little bit of that now.
I think chemistry is like first understanding each other's strengths and weaknesses. And I think from a production standpoint, we have great producers and directors that understand our strengths and weaknesses. And then the next is trust, because Shaq, myself, and Charles, we don't go to production meetings. So they have no idea what we're going to say, but they trust.
Yeah.
And it happened when I first started. He's no longer here. He just retired last year. Tim Kiley. He said to me, he's like, hey, Kenny, the production meeting, what are you going to say? And, you know, what are the keys to the game? I'm like, I don't know the keys to the game until it happens. It's like, oh, you know, I don't know the keys to, like, it's like trends. I'm like, no, but because they're playing Golden State today and Philly tomorrow, they're going to change the way they play. So I don't know the keys. It's different every day in the NBA. I said, and why do I have to come to this? And he said, what do you mean? I said, what's going to happen on the floor that Charles or myself are not going to know? And Shaq wasn't here. Like, what's going to happen in a game that we haven't seen, heard of, or been part of? Like nothing, unless the lights go out. I said, we've been part of that too, when the lights went out in the arena. So there's nothing that can go on. So then, don't come. We'll see what you say when you say it. Charles comes and he goes, way in the back. He said, Kenny, what are you going to say about this topic? I was like, and I'm sitting next to Ernie. And Ernie, look, he knew what I was going to say. I said, you'll see when I say it. So we have no clue what we're telling us. So it's real conversation.
Yeah.
It's real dialogue.
I think one of the things I've got as I've got older as a TV viewer, and I'm going to refer back to the area I'm most comfortable here, which is watching like football on TV, is the increasing rise of pundits as personalities, right? So when I was younger, I watched Match of the Day, and like, yeah, you could kind of predict what like Alan Hansen and Mark Lawrence and what they were going to go into, like, but they were going to talk about defensive football and like analyze that kind of stuff, but you didn't really get the other side of that. And I think this is something that's growing in the UK a little bit. Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher on Monday Night Football, they have like I think a pretty good on-set chemistry. Perhaps that they also do the Overlap podcast and they bring Roy Keane into that. And like, this has been a personal obsession of mine in recent months, is watching clips of Roy Keane on Instagram. Like, everything about that man is fascinating to me, but like, it works well because the pundits that he works with bring a different side out to him. Like, sometimes he can just play the hard man, but like, it's quite funny when they bring out like the softer side of stories of him, or he tells anecdotes where he's not playing the character. Essentially, you get a bit more real Roy. That's hard to say. But I guess when like this has been way more established in the US, and that's kind of a big part of Inside the NBA. Was there any kind of elements of your conversations with like with Craig or with Kenny where that came across?
Yeah, I think so. But it's also interesting because in terms of like the increasing importance of on-air talent as well. I think you only need to look at this panel to kind of understand that. Like at the end of last year, all four of those guys who are on Inside the NBA signed contract extensions described as long-term. Charles Barkley's has been reported to be worth more than $100 million over that time, which is more than he earned during his time as an NBA player, which kind of just goes to show, yeah, the increasing value of having good pundits. But it's not even just good pundits during that on-air period. It's, as you mentioned, it's kind of those who are going to sort of keep the conversation going beyond the game and are going to kind of lend themselves to going viral in those clips and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's definitely changing. And I think from speaking to Craig and from speaking to Kenny, that's something that they're definitely kind of aware of as well. But I guess the other side to that is that as a pundit, like you're increasingly, I suppose, vulnerable to criticism. You're also increasingly vulnerable to ridicule if you give a hot take that doesn't turn out to be right. And you get the impression from watching Inside the NBA, there are lots of things that happen on that show that, you know, could leave them open to criticism. Kenny Smith famously walked off set in solidarity with the NBA players when they were boycotting games after the shooting of Jacob Blake. So a lot of the topics that pundits talk about now sort of transcend sport itself and kind of polarize opinion a lot of the time. So yeah, they're increasingly vulnerable with personalities too. But speaking to Kenny in particular, you know, one of the things he said is that he doesn't really care about what people think. And I think that's a really important trait to have, I guess, in this business, because you have to be pretty thick-skinned because you are being beamed out to millions of people every week, putting your opinions out there. People are going to agree with those, people are going to disagree with those, but being able to take that on the chin and kind of continue in the same way without letting it affect you is really, really important. So I thought his take on that was really interesting. Yeah, we can probably actually listen to what he had to say on that here.
I don't think anyone criticizes or makes fun of us more than we do of each other. Mm-hmm. Like, we know each other so well that we could dig to a place that no one else could dig, and we do it.
Yeah.
So whenever something says something else on television or what they say, you can't, it's like your brother, like you just know, yeah, we're talking about your room messy, but we're also talking about like what your mom said to you 2 days ago. We know everything. So no one cares. There's never been anything that's said by someone else other than those three that I cared about, honestly. I have cared about things that they said. Mm-hmm. I really have. Like they rubbed me the right way, rubbed me the wrong way. But no, I can't think of anybody outside of this network that I've ever heard them say something and would care.
I think it becomes more and more relevant, especially with, I mean, like Kenny Smith in particular talks about he doesn't really listen to people on social media, but there was that study that Gary Neville basically undertook with Jill Scott recently where they swapped social media logins for a period of time and both of them got to experience the kind of bizarre vitriol that like nameless eggs on social media throw at them. It's interesting to hear someone who's got himself into a position where he completely blocks that out and just listens to the people that matter to him, which is nice and it's really easy to say, but way harder to do, I think.
Yeah, I guess also it helps that he was a professional sportsman, so you're kind of used to dealing with that kind of thing, being in the spotlight. Having said that he doesn't care about what people think, I did notice his Twitter here recently retweeted a clip of Adam Silver praising his punditry. So maybe he likes it when people have nice things to say. But yeah, it was interesting to hear him talk about it because, yeah, I think as a pundit, as I say, you've got to be thick-skinned if you want to sort of succeed.
Someone who I can't imagine ever listens to basically anyone is Shaq. he's a fascinating just character, like generally, I think. There's an amazing documentary on Sky Documentaries. It's literally called Shaq. It's like three or four parts. It's really, really nicely shot, really nicely made. It's quite classic. He's sat in that like chair in a big studio and like you see him walk into shot and all this kind of stuff. I mean, even that doesn't do justice to how like physically massive he is. But like he brings a completely different element to Inside the NBA, right? Like it's not the same show unless Shaq is there, I don't think. Were there any kind of interesting stories that got told about him? I mean, you've already told me one and you were there for 5 minutes of a halftime show.
As soon as he walked in the room, you could sort of feel his presence there. Not necessarily just because of his sheer physical size. And funnily enough, I'll go off on a tangent quickly, but we were told that basically the chairs some of the panelists sit in are custom made and could only be built once inside the building because they're so big and because the players are so big. Some of the panelists are so big. But yeah, you could really feel his presence when he walked on set. Yeah, as I mentioned, Shaq really brings that slapstick side of things. But one of the other journalists put it, I thought they put it quite well when they said that Shaq really enjoys being Shaq. And throughout that halftime show, there were other people sort of watching alongside us, sort of them record. And he had a lot of people in stitches throughout it, just with his sort of like off the cuff remarks, just his general demeanor on set as well. The producer sat 30 seconds until you go live, and he's still there kind of cracking jokes, talking to other people on set, just so relaxed as an individual, so comfortable in like his own skin, basically. I wish I could be that confident, but you know, we can't all be Shaq. But it's interesting as well, because you know, sometimes you think putting someone with that profile, the achievements he's had in the game, his fame, you think putting him on set straight away is an immediate recipe for success. Whereas it was quite interesting listening to Craig Barry talk about the fact that at the start, when he started working on Inside the NBA, you know, Shaq didn't quite get it straight away. And, you know, drawing parallels with, like, you've been talking about Gary Neville a lot. We remember when he started on Monday Night Football, he was a quivering mess for a lot of it. And it took him time to sort of get used to his role. But I think rather than put the onus on Shaq, the producers kind of looked at what they were doing wrong. So there was a really interesting anecdote that he told kind of around something that you mentioned already about Shaq falling over live on set. And that was kind of basically sort of the light bulb moment for the producers in terms of how they worked with Shaq going forward. So, yeah, I think we can actually listen to that clip now.
I'll give you another story, like, quickly, just an anecdote. Like, Shaq first came on, he was trying to kind of figure out his way on the set, right? Like, he came on and he was like, tried to be Brian Gumbel, and that really wasn't working. And he really just wasn't that good, right? Like, if you ask him, he would tell you he's not that good. And time went on, and, you know, we were kind of trying to figure out, you know, the best way for him to kind of fit in, because, you know, the show was established with Kenny and Chuck, and that's a big voice on the other side of the set. And he, there's a point where he famously got up and tripped on the set. Kind of this door swung open for us. And we realized it's not Shaq. It's us. We're not producing him correctly. He brings a whole different physical aspect to the show. Like, we're approaching it like, oh, here's, you know, Chuck, Kenny, EJ, and Shaq, and MFN, right? But the fact is that they all act and react differently. And each of them, the approach to producing each of them is a little different. Mm-hmm. And that physical nature that Shaq brought to the set that we just couldn't ultimately get ourselves around until he fell and it shook the set and kind of woke us all up. We're like, wait a second. Like, okay, we get it. Like, we'll let Shaq be Shaq all over the set. And wherever he goes, whatever he does, we'll be there. And it just taught us kind of how to adapt from behind the camera. You hire people, and it's absolutely imperative that you lean into the style and culture of that person. Because if you put them in a box and say, oh, you're a producer, you produce like this, then ultimately it won't be a true representation of the audience that we're serving.
I love Shaq's stories. I think I could hear them all day. It's just something that, like, it's his facial expressions, it's his like mannerisms, it's his deep booming voice. Actually really interesting to hear that he didn't initially work.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, I can't claim to have been watching Inside the NBA when he started, but you just kind of assume, seeing him now, that he would have slotted in seamlessly. It does go to show, like, programs like this are hard. Like, that sort of chemistry doesn't happen overnight. And the fact that those guys have been on the show for so long is something that a lot of other networks can't really replicate. You can't duplicate that. And I guess it's also testament to kind of the way that TNT Sports have allowed those guys to operate and given them the freedom to kind of work in the way that they want to.
Well, we've said we haven't much of a chance to see them, but NBA rights in the UK, I don't think, are the biggest property. They've been shuffled around between BT and Sky in the last couple of cycles. Sky made a bit more of a play of having them, I think, in the last cycle. They had their own studio show. They've carved out dedicated weekend windows for this kind of stuff. But it was announced a couple of weeks ago now that, yeah, that TNT would be taking back those rights again. So they were previously on BT, went Sky. Now they're back on what is TNT Sports in the UK, Warner Brothers Discovery owned. I guess, like, one of the reasons why they took you out there is to be like, this is what's kind of coming down the road for viewers in the UK. Can you just, like, talk us through exactly the NBA coverage on TNT, I guess?
This is where my conversations with Scott Young kind of come into this a little bit. So he's the senior vice president of content and production for Warner Bros. Discovery Sports in Europe. And yeah, so he was able to give quite a lot of insight in terms of, you know, why they wanted to acquire the NBA rights and, you know, how it fits the sort of strategic transformation of BT Sport becoming TNT Sports in the UK, which is a rebrand that happened a few months ago. And it was quite interesting hearing him talk about basically the naming of that channel, because he said during their research, he found that 80% of people in the UK weren't aware of TNT. So it was kind of like you bring this new brand into a market, but at the same time, it's an opportunity to grow the TNT Sports brand on a global scale. So TNT Sports, obviously a massive player in the US, also present in Latin America, and now in the UK as well. And he said the acquisition of the NBA rights was basically part of the strategic alignment on acquisitions of future rights. So it's quite clear to see why they would want to do that. You know, they've got this heritage of showing the NBA in the US. They're already producing some like market leading coverage there. So why not show that off in the UK to get people familiar with, you know, what TNT Sports is all about, what a sports broadcast on TNT looks like, and kind of introduce themselves a little bit to the UK market in that way, alongside all of the stuff that they're already showing, like Premier League, Champions League, MotoGP, etc. So I guess in the first instance, what viewers will be seeing is TNT Sports coverage in the US on TNT Sports in the UK. So those Tuesday night broadcasts, those Thursday night broadcasts will be shown in the UK alongside all of that pre-game, half-time, post-game coverage, and also the whole inside the NBA program as well. But interestingly, TNT Sports package in the UK is actually, it's nearly four times as big as TNT Sports in the US. So I mentioned earlier that TNT Sports have 65 games a season in the US. They have 250 in the UK. I mean, he said basically one of the advantages of being able to work with the team over in the US is that they can kind of route those games through that production studio in Techwood. So they're not relying on the NBA's international feed. So they can actually choose which games they're airing in the UK, which is kind of one advantage of it. But also just, you know, being able to rely on that team over in Techwood to enhance that NBA coverage and help produce kind of like supporting content around it. Because let's face it, NBA is on a bit of an awkward time for UK viewers. So producing that sort of social media content around it, that digital content that can sit on TNT Sports digital platforms in the UK, that's going to be really important for driving awareness of the live stuff. And so it was just interesting to hear, because basically it's pretty much since Warner Media and Discovery combined, I think the transaction was approved at the start of last year. It's the first time really that the sports production teams in the UK and US have been working together on a property. So he said it's been a bit of a learning experience in terms of figuring out how they can all kind of feed in to what they're doing on opposite sides of the Atlantic. But it basically sounds like this is kind of just the start of those departments working together really closely and kind of, you know, supercharging their content creation.
And that is unthinkable a year ago. So in a really short amount of time, we've managed to be able to connect with a team who love making sports and invite them to be a part of the production of the games.
So on the weekends, which is where they have those carved out games for European windows, so they're played slightly earlier in the US, what's the production going to look like? What's the setup going to be for UK viewers?
Yeah, so as I said, they can rely on that team in Techwood to basically help them on the production of that, which means they can choose which games they want, which is quite helpful, I guess, because they said in the first instance they're just going to be taking the TNT coverage and broadcasting it, and then they're going to start tweaking it based on the reaction they see from the viewers for that. So it would be a sort of case of, it'll basically be a case of, you know, does what works in the US work in the UK? If it does, then great. But if it doesn't, what do we have to do differently? Do you know, do we have to lean into a specific team? Do we have to lean into a specific player? Do we have to lean more into the sort of social side of things? What is it that's going to work for a UK audience that maybe works for that specific market that doesn't in the US? And I think also what Scott also told me was that they're sort of planning a co-produced studio show. So that will be one that's specific to the UK market. That's not sort of announced yet, but he said that they're sort of in the early planning stages for that. So that's potentially coming next year. But just generally, I think those Saturday and Sunday primetime slots will be really, really important, because if you think about coverage of a US sports property in the UK, you probably first think of Sky Sports and the NFL, and how they've kind of managed to own that period on a Sunday, especially after kind of, you think of Super Sunday finishing, Super Sunday on Sky Sports, their Premier League coverage finishing, a lot of people might stay on and sort of continue watching the NFL into the night.
It's exactly how I got into the NFL.
It's exactly how you do it, yeah. So I think having those Saturday and Sunday primetime slots would be really important because it's kind of that appointment to view moment when people are awake, basically. But, you know, there's still the opportunity for them to cross-promote their NBA coverage. So Scott said on a sort of like a Tuesday night, they'll be using their Champions League coverage to basically alert people to the fact that if they commit an extra few hours, then they'll be able to watch the NBA as well. So yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see how the market reacts to the coverage. But, you know, as we've sort of spoken about already, when I told people I was going to Inside the NBA, you know, people in this office were like, no way, you're going to meet Ernie Johnson, you're going to meet Shaq O'Neal. There's already that awareness. Similar, like a lot of my friends were the same, you know, people who don't even work in the industry. So there is already that awareness of what Inside the NBA is. And Kenny Smith, funnily enough, said 15 years ago he was sent to the UK on a bit of a promotional trip and was sat in the room with the NBA's marketing people, and he described it a little bit like trying to describe rap music to people about what basketball was. And it's definitely not at that stage anymore. I think the UK basketball audience is a lot more knowledgeable than it was 15 years ago. So I think they'll definitely be receptive to this combination of what we were talking about earlier, you know, the cutting edge analysis and also the entertainment that comes with it.
Yeah, I find the Warner Brothers like global approach to this quite interesting because there's going to be some other things that will play here as well. Firstly, you've got the European games now, like they're in Paris at the moment, they'll probably move around a little bit. What did TNT do with that? Do they bring people over? How do they change the production? Like, that's a chance to do kind of what Sky does with the NFL really well, I think, and bring that to UK viewers or in a European time zone and tell slightly different stories and do their coverage slightly differently. But I think one interesting thing that we talked about when we were like thinking, what's another option for this, is the reverse, right? Like, Warner Brothers Discovery has this big pan-European broadcast rights deal for the Olympic Games, but it doesn't have the rights in the US.
Yeah.
The next Olympics is in Paris next year. Did Scott tell you any more about like what their plans are with that and how they plan to kind of use this like global approach going the other way compared to the NBA?
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of one of the other things that they've been figuring out is, you know, what does this look like beyond the NBA? You know, the NBA is already kind of there and ready for them to pass straight through to Europe. But exactly, how does this work the other way? And Craig Barry also described the Olympics as an opportunity sort of this happening in reverse, basically. So I think they're still working through the plans, but Scott basically referenced the fact that they'll be able to lean on that team in Atlanta to essentially, yeah, supercharge their content creation around Paris 2024. So it'll be a situation where, you know, for example, people will go to sleep in Europe, but that team in Atlanta will still be working on Olympic action that's been happening that day, creating content that then, you know, when the broadcast team wakes up in Europe, that content will be there for them to use as they please, whether it's in the live linear broadcast, whether it's across their digital platforms, and they'll be feeding into it that way. So yeah, that's one way that they'll be sort of lining up beyond the NBA. But I think another thing that will be interesting to watch is kind of whether this strategy kind of informs future rights acquisitions and what they collaborate on within the existing portfolio as well. You know, I think one of the properties that Scott mentioned was MLB, which TNT Sports has rights to in both markets at the moment. But yeah, how does it inform future rights acquisitions? Do they both go after similar properties in both markets to have that more lined up approach? We'll see, I guess, but I think it would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, one that kind of immediately jumps out to me, and I'm just future gazing here a little bit, is obviously the Premier League. Like, it's that same thing, isn't it? So you've got TNT that got the rights here. If they get the rights in the US, currently on NBC until like much later on in this decade, but Premier League will probably be looking at this going like, oh, wow, interesting. Probably another tool to negotiate on. Sam, you've written about this. Where can we find this feature and tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, if you feel like 40 minutes of your time is a little bit long, hopefully the feature takes a little bit less to read. But yeah, that's available on sportspromedia.com at the moment. So it's basically a behind the scenes look at Inside the NBA, but also a closer look at how Warner Bros. Discovery sports teams on both sides of the Atlantic are now working a lot closer together. Hopefully it's an interesting read, but it forms part of our broadcast week here at Sports Pro. So basically a week of coverage featuring some of the leading innovators in the space. We've got pieces on the revamp of WRC's Rally TV. We've got breakdown of the state of play in the European football media rights market, and also a closer look at what's going on in the US at the moment. So yeah, plenty of content to digest for our readers.
Yeah, and for those of you who aren't aware, we have launched another kind of addition to our SP Plus subscription product. That's the Media Hub. And for those of you who haven't checked it out yet or seen it, it's actually a really, really like useful resource. It's got market spotlights, which break down particular sections. It has sector maps, so you can find out who are the companies that like dominating in certain like, certain parts of the broadcast space. Media rights tracking for month by month. Company profiles on the bigger broadcast companies globally, not just one particular market, but all over the place. And like roundups of like kind of the key deals going on at the time. And luckily enough, for you listeners, we are currently offering 25% off Sports Pro Plus Premium, the annual membership, that is. And that is an offer that expires by the time this comes out. That'll be tomorrow, so 24th of November. It's a Black Friday offer. If you use code SP25 at the checkout, you will get 25% off your annual premium membership. And as someone who gets it anyway, because I work here, it is really good. It is one of the most comprehensive products we offer. And for right now, you can get it at 25% off. So well worth checking that out. Probably a good place to leave this week's podcast. Sam Karp, thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for telling us all about your trip.
Cheers, Dom. Thanks for letting me tell you all about it.
And we will be back from Madrid next week. Cheers, guys.